You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to a Thursday morning edition of Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the only podcast that breaks down every Heat game, news item, rumor, and more. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm here, as always, with David Ramil. We're recapping the Heat's 111-84 loss to the Jazz Wednesday night in a game in which the Heat could never get their offense going. They ended up scoring a season low in points. Without Goran Dragic and Hassan Whiteside, Spo started Tyler Johnson, Josh Richardson, Rodney Magruder, James Johnson, and Bam Adebayo. Utah came out and scored the first 13 points of the game, and Miami didn't get its first score until 3.5 minutes into the game. Spo finally put in Justice Winslow and Kelly Olynyk, who have been their two best players, arguably, over the last couple weeks, with about 6.5 minutes left in the first quarter. But by then, it was already 15-2. You hate to say that a game was over halfway through the first quarter, but that's definitely what it felt like, David.
It did. And I think for this Miami team, this version of this team, without any clear-cut superstar, facing that kind of challenge and that large deficit to start a game was just incredibly demoralizing. I mean, all the goodwill and positivity they may have built up over the last three games with big wins over the Clippers and Suns, and then, you know, holding their own against a pretty decent Lakers team, it seemed like all of that was just wiped away in an instant, and they just didn't have a response for it. I mean, they could have mounted a comeback. A 13-point deficit isn't so drastic where they can't find a way to come back. But you have to give credit to Utah, of course. I mean, they played some pretty good defense. They knocked down a high number of their shots. I'm not sure if it's a chicken and an egg situation where Miami just got into a funk early on and allowed Utah to do whatever they could and didn't feel inspired in a way to try and stop them. Or maybe they just didn't have an answer to or a solution to try and stop them off defensively. But either way, they were just out of it right away, pretty soon afterwards, let's say, and just didn't seem like they had any kind of response. Not enough talent on this team, not anybody who was willing to take on that challenge. All the positivity, again, that we've seen from individual players, guys like Bam, Justice, both of them really struggled tonight as well. Even Olynyk, you know, who had been a positive off the bench, just couldn't seem to get anything mustered there. And I mean, you have to look at the starting group, of course, and I know we'll do that later on, but it was really tough watching them fall apart against a Utah team that's had their share of troubles. I've talked to you about the Jazz before. I thought a lot of their struggles early on this season so far have been as a result of scheduling, because they've been playing so many games away from Utah as they try to, you know, find their own identity and whatnot, and clearly being at home has re-energized them, and unfortunately it was just Miami's turn to be the next doormat.
Yeah, the Heat fall to 2-2 on this road trip, and they've got the Grizzlies coming up on Friday. That's not going to be an easy game. You and I think both picked that as a loss, so we're predicting at this point it would be 2, or after that it would be 2-3. But like the Jazz have played the Heat well. I know Miami beat them the last time these two teams played each other, but they had to come back from 19 points down to do it. Now, obviously, that comeback didn't happen tonight. Utah, I think, is just a team that matches up really well with Miami. Donovan Mitchell, of course, the pick right before Bam Adebayo, goes off for 21 points on 9-17 shooting, had a great all-around game, was the best player on the floor for the entire night. And you look at what Utah did, they had six guys in double-digit scoring. I mean, you had Joe Ingles with 10. Gobert had a double-double with 10 points, 11 rebounds. Mitchell ended up with the 21. Derek Favors off the bench dominated. 17 points on eight shots, 17 points. He was just 8 rebounds. He was just everything you'd want out of a backup five there. And then you had Dante Exum and Kyle Korver putting in 14 and 16 points apiece. Miami, you know, you had Rodney Magruder was the high score for them for with 16 points, but most of that was garbage time, right? Like, that was all in the fourth quarter. Olynyk, kind of the same thing, ended up with 14 points. A lot of that was in the fourth quarter. And the Heat, they scored 15 points in the first quarter, 18 points total in the second quarter, only 20 points in the third quarter. Like, I don't care what you score in the fourth quarter, you're done. Like, if you score like that, I mean, Utah outscored Miami. What Miami scored in the first half, Utah outscored them in the first quarter. Like, that's just a recipe for failure.
Yeah. I mean, this was a real drastic pace. I mean, Utah plays slowly and deliberately for a reason. Their defense is pretty solid overall. They just didn't allow Miami to put up a whole heck of a lot of shots. Only 77 shot attempts on the night, of which they only converted 29, good for 37.7%. That's That's sad. You know, so for a team like Miami that struggles offensively anyway, to match up with a group like Utah that deliberately slows things down, keeps you from getting quality looks, keeps you from knocking any shots down really with any kind of regularity or ease, that was just a really difficult challenge for Miami, and clearly that was the case. I posed a question before when I was talking about it. How much of that is just Miami getting into a funk early on and going, forget it, we're done, because they seemed like they just didn't even bother trying once they got that large deficit early on. Do you think they could have mounted a comeback? Do you think
the starting unit was really bad, and they couldn't, and by the time the best two players on the team lately, Winslow and Olynyk, came in, they were looking at a double-digit deficit. I think that was part of it. I also think part of it was just the fact that they're in the middle of this West Coast slog of a road trip, and it just looked like this was kind of an off night, you know? It was just like they just didn't have it. They didn't have the legs. That you mentioned the pace. It was played at a pace of 95.6, which would be by far the slowest in the NBA. Yes, there you go. This episode is sponsored by Action Heat. Action Heat makes the world's best battery-heated clothing. Heat on demand at the touch of a button. Control your environment with Action Heat. Action Heat clothing is engineered to safely and efficiently deliver heat via seating panels, similar to a heated car seat. They can reach temperatures of up to 135 degrees and are powered by rechargeable batteries that last up to 12 hours on one charge. Action Heat batteries can also be used to recharge your phone while you're wearing them. That's crazy. Perfect for any friend or family on your holiday gift list. Great for anyone who just works outdoors, skiers, snowboarders, anybody that you know that loves just to be outside or hates being cold. It's toasty warmth and comfort from head to toe. They've got heated jackets, socks, gloves, hats, even underwear. Heated products that fit everybody's budget, starting at just $39.99. And we've got a special deal for our listeners to save 20% off of your entire order. Just go to actionheat.com/lockedon to check out everything Action Heat has to offer. That's actionheat.com/lockedon, or use the coupon code LOCKEDON at checkout to save 20%. Stay toasty and warm while you enjoy all of your outdoor activities this winter with Action Heat. Let's get to some of your Twitter questions you sent in. Thanks to everyone, of course, who follows us on Twitter at LockedOnHeat and sends us in questions using the hashtag AskLOHeat, especially after a loss like this. Let's go to our first question from Lino. Lino asks, is this game different if we have Hassan Whiteside in the paint? Now, David, let's look at the difference in points in the paint. Utah had 38. Miami had scored 26 points in the paint. But really what stands out is the rebounding edge. Utah had 52 rebounds to Miami's 30. They had 7 offensive rebounds, which is a lot for a team, especially that didn't miss a whole lot of baskets when you consider that they shot 52.6%. The fact that they also got seven offensive rebounds, that's not good. I would venture to say that, Hassan Whiteside would have helped the team, but on a night where nobody played well, that's not really saying a whole lot.
Maybe, but we also saw in the win against Utah at Miami that Hassan does tend to get up for these games because of the Rudy Gobert factor. That notwithstanding, just from the overall perspective of how this game was played, the problem is that Hassan plays at a very slow pace, and that's what changes, you know, that's what limits Miami when they're facing about 20-something other teams on a nightly basis. It's against a group like Utah where he could flourish because that pace is slower, deliberate, et cetera. Mm-hmm. I'm curious because, you know, we're looking ahead to Memphis, and although we both predicted it's a loss, that's more of the same kind of tempo, the grit and grind, if you will. And I think Hassan will play more effectively that against a guy like Marcus Saul, who's battling some age and injury issues. So I wonder whether or not he'll be able to show what might have happened differently in Utah tonight, because I think the pace would have helped Hassan to be a little bit more effective. He would have limited what Utah did in the paint. Not that they had a huge night as far as their scoring overall in the paint is concerned, but he would have certainly hindered that a lot more.
It's only because they were shooting so well from the perimeter.
So, I mean, it would have made things a little different. And, as you know, again, from Miami's perspective, maybe they would have just gone to Hassan a lot. You know, maybe it would have been the kind of game that he would have loved to have gotten, you know, 20-something shot attempts, and he would have probably converted those at a fairly decent rate, and maybe he would have kept Miami in it. So
I think you're right.
He's on to something there, I think.
I think you're right, and we should say that the Heat have announced that Whiteside will rejoin the team after the birth of his child, will rejoin the team for the game Friday against Memphis. Kevin asks, Will this horrific game force Eric Spoelstra to change the starting lineup, i.e. start Justice and Olynyk? And then Lyle asks us something similar. I'm seriously done. I'm actually so frustrated. Huh. When Goran Dragic is out, Justice needs to be starting. Spo had no business rolling out that starting lineup against the Jazz. David, just to rehash really quick, Tyler Johnson, Rodney Magruder, Josh Richardson, James Johnson, Bam Adebayo. That was the starting five. It didn't work. I think they put the ball in Tyler Johnson's hands early on to say, okay, let's see if you could do a little bit of point guard along with Josh Richardson, both of them. Tyler Johnson was, he played 9 minutes before he came out, I think, or 9 minutes in the first half. I'm trying to remember. It was one of, it was some of the most forgettable 9 minutes he's ever played in his career for, during a season that's been largely forgettable for him. He couldn't run. He was just not able to facilitate. Josh Richardson was struggling to do the same thing. I think both of these guys are right. You just, when Goran Dragic isn't playing, I don't know that you can, if you're the Heat, I don't know that you could play a single minute without one of Dragic, Justice Winslow, or Dwayne Wade on the floor. You just, you need one of those three guys.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. I'm not sure what to make of it, to be honest with you, because we keep seeing this stubbornness from Eric Spoelstra, this unwillingness to make these kinds of changes, and I can't recall if it was yesterday or when any one of our guests, I can't recall now, you know, they brought up the point that Spoelstra is willing to make changes during the playoffs. And maybe that's because he feels in the confines of a 7-game series, it's okay to make much more drastic, sudden changes. And maybe over an 82-game season, it's all about staying the course, finding a way to push through it, next man up, all the other tropes that Spoelstra is so familiar and you know, embraces so readily. But this is just ridiculous. Like, I mean, you're seeing a number of players that are not playable because either they're battling injuries, because they have limited talent, because they just can't find a way to perform at 100%, and yet he trots them out into the starting lineup when there's clearly better options off the bench.
Yeah, it's so one thing. It's one thing if you're the big three Heat and you're just sort of like throwing people around Chris Bosh, Dwayne Wade, LeBron James, right? But when you don't even have a good starting unit in the first place, just play the best five guys. And then the bench, let that figure itself out. Like, if you're the Heat right now, just get your best five guys on the floor to start the game. We've talked about this all. And I hope that this was a signal. Just like, look, I don't care what you're trying to do with getting Tyler Johnson and James Johnson minutes or whatever. Olynyk, Winslow, Bam, Richardson, those four guys need to be on the floor. If Goran Dragic is available, make him the fifth guy. If not, make it Rodney Magruder or make it Tyler or make it whoever. But get your four best guys on the floor. And if you've got a healthy roster, the best five, at some point you just got to get there and just let the bench take care of itself, because when you don't, you end up looking up at a 13-0 lead with 6 minutes left in the, and the game's basically over. It's time for our stat of the game.
Take that for data.
What do you got, David?
1 of 7. Tyler Johnson's field goal rate tonight, not positive at all. Tyler clearly not healthy and probably not facing a quality matchup there, having to go up either against Rubio or Mitchell, who are both solid defenders and limited what he could do, but he was just clearly overwhelmed. More and more, it seems likely that Tyler should only be a bench player that can come in and provide an occasional spark plug. He's, you know, he was, and we've talked about this on a number of occasions, his ceiling is the best six man available. And you know, maybe not even a six man of the year candidate, but just at least a good solid six man on this Heat roster. And him in the starting lineup is an absolute abysmal failure. And this is, you know, clearly indicative of that. Look, I like Tyler. I'm sick of the contract talk. I don't care about that anymore, to be honest with you. But I just don't know how you can trot him out for 22 minutes of play and have him be so clearly ineffective. A plus-minus of minus 26. Not the worst of the team. That actually belongs to Dwayne Wade with a minus 28, but still a pretty bad overall night for Tyler. And I'm not sure how Spoelstra justifies those minutes to himself, unless there is a tank going
on. If Tyler was just 20% better on average than what he is, he still wouldn't be worth 19 sure. million, but you'd be able to play him. Like, he'd be effective, but he's not impactful right now. Like, we just recorded with Ben Golliver, and that show's going to go up on Friday. He mentioned something about Hassan Whiteside. I don't want to spoil the whole thing, but basically how Whiteside not being on the floor, you don't really notice it a whole lot. I feel like the same could be said for Tyler Johnson, but even when he's on the floor, like, you just, it's been a forgettable year for him, and it just sort of sucks. My stat is 38.6%. That's what Miami shot from the 2-point area. just the same problem for the Heat rearing its ugly head. This head started to come back a little bit. They started making some shots in the paint and in the restricted area lately. That went right back to what it was. Again, maybe it's just tired legs, just being, you know, exhausted
it's
from the
Rudy
road
Gobert
trip.
Too.
I think Rudy Gobert, that's true. Rudy Gobert is a big part of it. And you got to credit Utah's defense. We haven't really done that a lot. They played really, really good defense tonight. And Gobert had a huge impact on what the Heat were able to do and not able to do, mostly offensively.
And maybe that's where, you know, and we haven't really talked about the positive impact that he can make on occasion, but this is maybe where Whiteside might have been able to change things a little bit. Again, this is okay. It's a problem starting Whiteside against teams like Atlanta or Sacramento that want to run you off the floor. It's not a problem starting him against a 7'5" center like Utah's Rudy Gobert that wants to play at a slow pace, you know. And in this case, when you're missing those shots at the rim, you need a bigger body to try and challenge Gobert for those rebounds, and that's why that rebounding edge went so clearly to Gobert in the jet.
I go back to what I said before. I mean, they should play Bam Adebayo in the starting unit, and then swap Olynyk and Whiteside. Olynyk will end up starting most of the time, but look at what Toronto does with Ibaka and Valanciunas. Ibaka obviously is a starter for 80% of the games, but in certain matchups, they can go with Valanciunas, and Boston does something similar.
Roster flexibility. Who knew that was an option?
That's all we have for today. Thanks for listening. Be sure to subscribe to Locked On Heat on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or whatever you use to listen to podcasts, and leave us a rating and review while you're there. Connect on Twitter at Locked On Heat or email us at lockedonheat@gmail.com. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
Now what choice did I have?